Thank you for inviting me, and it's very exciting to be here. I just jump into my talk. Resonance is a key word in the study of post-war art, pointing to the growing occurrences of similar practices found around the same time across geographical boundaries, even when there are no evident connections, that is, interpersonal or inter-informational knowledge among practitioners. As I have demonstrated in my recent book, Radicalism in the Wilderness, International Contemporaneity and 60s Art in Japan, resonances together with connection characterizes the international contemporaneity or kokusaiteki dojisei of the post-war decade. In 60s Japan, the sense of international contemporaneity underscored the newly emerging practice of gendai bijutsu, or literary contemporary art, which anticipated today's contemporary art worldwide. In conjunction with the exhibition Misfits and the program of Runaway Conference, the ideas resonating with the wilderness, my talk will center on the works by three practitioners, Matsuzawa Yutaka, The Prey, and Gan, whom I have discussed in the book in depth. These artists assumed conscious distance from the mainstream art world and thus exemplified a wilderness aspect of 60s art in Japan. In doing so, I would like to prepare ourselves for a larger discussion in world art history. Granted, it is always important to add hitherto unknown practices from the non-West to a world map of modernism. Each individual paper presented in this program or elsewhere is valuable addition, but if we are to be content with merely adding more, it is tantamount to building a Babylonian encyclopedia of information. If instead we are to uphold a decentered view of multiple modernisms, the history of our discipline, art history, tells us that the addition is not enough, especially not enough to dismantle the entrenched Eurocentrism in art history. What we need is conceptualize a new way to narrate a world art history of post-war art while embracing multiplicity. Our mission is to devise a more dynamic, multivariant way to look at it. And I have proposed a methodology in my book, introducing a set of concepts built on the geohistorical understanding of contemporaneity in the sense of being contemporaneous here. In this proposed methodology, decentering must be followed by amplifying and regrouping similar yet dissimilar contemporaneous practices in a spectrum. Ultimately, we'll have a number of such spectrums to reimagine the history of multiple modernisms. In essence, it is a bottom-up and periphery-in methodology, as opposed to the Eurocentric top-down and center-out conception. That is to say, to build a narrative from bottom-up, our starting point is not so much global as local. The precision of global narrative depends on the precision of our understanding of the local. It may sound contradictory, but I cannot emphasize enough that the more global we want to be in our investigation, the more local we need to be in our attention. If so, it goes without saying that to achieve a truly global scale, this methodology in reality requires more than one set of knowledge and one kind of specialist, making collaboration among many specialists necessary. This forum David has organized in conjunction with his exhibition, I believe, is precisely to generate that kind of collaboration for similar yet dissimilar practices to be amplified and regrouped. The specialists also have to regroup. With this in mind, my talk will concentrate on the local in preparation for a further global discussion beyond this evening and beyond this museum. I will first introduce you to the work of these three practitioners whose radicalism, I believe, stands out in the global context. In order to understand the nature of their being in the wilderness, the understanding of the counterpart, that is the mainstream, is imperative. I will outline the element of mainstream contemporary art world that was quickly expanding with the art establishment in the 60s Japan. To give a concrete sense of the mainstream and the wilderness, I will compare the wilderness artists with some familiar mainstream artists, such as Gutai and Monoha, and others. The oldest in age among the three practitioners, Matsuzawa Yutaka, was a pioneer conceptualist who made a complete break from the materiality of art in 64 in favor of mobilizing the mental faculty in the viewer as the foundation of his immaterial art. Born in 1922, Matsuzawa was a college student during the final years of World War II. The devastating ruins of capital Tokyo, a kind of the landscape of nothingness, made a strong impression on him. And he made it his lifelong mission to express the invisible, first in architecture, the subject he studied at Waseda University in Tokyo. In 1948, he gave up architecture and moved back from Tokyo to his hometown Shimotsuo in central Japan, where he began experimenting with poetry and art in order to express the invisible, ultimately in an invisible manner. His progress was slow, but by 61, his signature theory of Psi began to take concrete forms, and he made his first text-based work of art in that year. In 64, he established vanishing of matter as the core principle of his anti-civilization project by activating the viewer's mind to experience the invisible in his or her mind, such as non-sensory paintings. The foundational concept was kannen, which means meditative visualization in Pure Land Buddhism and idea in modern philosophy. Having been convinced that the modern civilization was a vast mistake, bringing humankind to the brink of extinction through two world wars, he diligently sought to invent an alternative form of civilization with immateriality as an ultimate method. The intellectual underpinnings of his materialism were parascience, primarily parapsychology, science, contemporary physics such as quantum mechanics and astrophysics, and non-Zen Buddhism. By adopting the immaterial method of kannen, he not only rejected the material foundation of the art, work of art, he also reconceptualized his work as apparatuses to activate the viewer's mind. Text he used in his works became operation manual of thought. How to use these novel apparatuses and how to use your mind. Then the gallery space as such became a container and thus another kind of apparatus to contain smaller apparatuses, or in some instances, the empty gallery alone could serve as his apparatuses. He further eschewed the idea of ownership of the work of art. This became possible because the work of art is now liberated from materiality and thus can be freely experienced by the mind-exercising viewer. It thus became possible for each and every human being, meaning you and me too, to experience and possess it. This was a complete makeover of what art could be. In other words, the significance of Matsuzawa's conceptualism constituted a twofold critique. Critique of humankind and its civilization as a whole, and then critique of the institution of art. It was The radicalism of his art of Kannen was such that by 1966, he hypothesized vanishing of humankind, the date of which he eventually set in 2222. We have some time, so we don't have to worry about it. But who knows? A visionary dimension of his conceptualism ultimately brought him to the stage of engaging the entire universe, that is, life forms on other planets. Generationally, the second oldest is the prey, a collective of happeners, a terminology for those who practice happenings, founded in 1607 in the Osaka area. The prey emerged toward the end of the radical 60s, which in Japan was jump-started by Gutai in the mid-50s and followed by two tendencies of anti-art, hangeijutsu, and non-art, higeijutsu. Performance art was a major development of this decade, encompassing those more conceptually oriented, as represented by Hired Center, and those more body-based, as represented by Zero Dimension. These artists staged their performances primarily in urban space, especially on the streets, manifesting varying degrees of anarchist aspiration against the background of a politically volatile social climate. The prey's activism in their first two decades, from 67 to 86, are summarized in prey's activities. In their first two decades, from 67 to 86, are summarized in the chronology on screen. Voyage, happening in an egg of 68, their first collective foray into landscapes, set their future direction. The group undertook one summer project annually, formulated through a year-long discussion and preparation by the members, which included a sizable number of non-artists. The idea of voyage or travel into landscape was paramount. In this chronology, the project shaded in dark green ostensibly features travel or voyages. For example, Current of Contemporary Art of 69, Sheep of 70, and Ie, which means a house of 72, were all journeys from Kyoto to Osaka along the rivers. In addition, the project in pale green encompassed the significant aspects of voyage that takes them away from mundane reality. As with Thunder of 77, annually repeated through 86, Thunder was staged in a mountaintop near Kyoto for a month every summer in order to foreground the time away from everyday existence. Eschewing urban space, the prey was committed to landscape near and far. They made voyage into ocean, through rivers, to mountains, in a lake, on a remote island, and to other wildernesses. In Wind of 76, they visited the violent northern landscape of Sarobetsu, Hokkaido, where they walked against the wind for 5 days, often trekking up and down hills thickly covered by striped bamboos. Their preference of landscape imbued their activities with earthwork dimension, both in scale and spirit, incorporating natural elements. Their love of nature was informed by what they call its infinite time and space. Unlike the extremely political anti-expo practitioners in the late 60s, the prey tended toward latent politics of the everyday, through which in their words, they aspired to probe people's everyday life with farmer-like persistence. In a way, the prey engaged the flip side of 60s Japan, where the high economic growth enabled the mass modernization of everyday life, in which comfort bred complacency. Unlike the subversive anti-art performances, the prey was in principle law-abiding, if only on surface. Above all, the group was not hostile to the general public, and they often collaborated with people outside the art world. As with their first voyage, which engaged the Fishermen's Union, the boat came from Fishermen's Union, a prefectural fishery station, and an oceanographer. However, Social compliance should not be mistaken as aesthetic compliance. Through their self-financed activities, they sought no reward other than perhaps publicity in the mass media. Their work thoroughly defied the convention of art. If the trade took advantage of the temperate climate and diverse landscapes in the Kansai region around Osaka, Gan, also founded in 67, had to contend with their residence in the backside of Japan, burdened by harsh winter weather. Short for Group Utora Niigata, Gan was the youngest among the three practitioners and the first vanguard collective hailing from Niigata. From the beginning, they had a clear intention of generating an avant-garde movement and closing their gap from the center. Yet, they exhausted their resources after presenting 5 exhibitions and 2 happening shows in Tokyo, marked in green, and Niigata, marked in blue, in the short space of 1 year. The group received some attention with their activism, but even though their works were competent in line with the dominant trend of tricky art, they soon hit creative impasse. After the first year, no longer able to continue as an exhibition society, they decided to mount individual effort under the banner of Gan. Especially from 69 onward, 2 central members, Horikawa Michio and Maeyama Tadashi, began to look more closely at their locale and found concrete realities to work with while adapting the repertoire of contemporary art strategies, male art, land art, and political art. In doing so, they successfully reduced the distance not only from Tokyo, but from the larger world. Important geographical markers are the city of Tokamachi, the Shinano River, and Sado Island. Of the 3, Tokamachi was where Horikawa resided at the time, and the Shinano River provided him with stones to initiate his series, Male Art by Sending Stones, in July 69. The Shinano River originate from the Japan Alps and then flow into the Sea of Japan. The Male Art project was inspired by the Apollo 11 mission that made the first moon landing. The mailing not only reduced the distance between Niigata and Tokyo by postal mailing, but it represented a kind of political statement, not unlike the stone thrown at the police by student radicals, prompting the recipients to think of earthly matters. As a part of the series, in December 69, he mailed a stone to President Nixon as a Christmas present, and then that was his long anti-war message. And then obviously the White House received the stone because the American embassy in Tokyo sent him a thank you note thanking an unusual Christmas present. The same 2 geographical markers are involved in the memorable Land Art project in February 70, an event to change the image of snow. With a titanic ambition, Gan painted a colorful abstraction on the snow-covered dry riverbed of the Shinano River in Tokamachi with a pesticide sprayer and a massive amount of color pigment donated by a chemical company in Tokyo. In the region known for the heaviest snow in Japan, the snow fields with yet more falling snow represented less a pleasure, joyous playground than a reminder of the burden such severe weather brought to everyday life. Hence, the title of the project, referring to their hope to transform the landscape of hardship into an occasion to present surprise for local residents. Although, in reality, the gorgeous color field abstraction they created was eclipsed by the constantly falling snow within 30 minutes. The third and last marker is Sado Island, which hosts a local base of Japan's self-defense forces, in specifically air defense forces. In the politically volatile days of 69, the base on the island became the stage of an anti-military protest of Konishi Makoto, a 21-year-old airman and radar specialist who, in essence, contested the constitutionality of the self-defense forces. As this incident was tried in the regional court, the locale of Niigata became a political battleground, which politicized both Maeyama and Horikawa. As gun, they formed postal mailing front, a kind of mail out network for activists nationwide in support of Konishi's struggle. As the main activities of postal mailing front, they offered Maeyama's anti-war stickers for camaraderie and called for zero-yen mailing as a way to shoot paper bullets at Prime Minister Sato Eisaku. To facilitate daily guerrilla acts, Gun issued zero-yen stamp designed by Horikawa, and then the face on the stamp is Prime Minister Sato Eisaku, and then the caption above it called the image of imperial person who has no ability, who is incompetent. I characterize these three manifestations of inventiveness and imaginations as wilderness in my book. The most obvious feature of the wilderness is remote landscape. But in my study, wilderness is more than no man's land. It has several layers of meaning with the connotation of out there. Above all, these three practitioners were out there geographically. Matsuzawa lived in Shimosuwa in central Japan, the number 15 marked there. Gan, as its name demonstrates, hailed from Niigata. And the play was group based in the Osaka area. In this sense, the activities in the wilderness signify regionalism. Their expressions are also out there, or outside the norms in thinking in art or everyday life. Matsuzawa's immaterialism, the play's voyage into landscape, and Gan's snow painting, snow mailing, and postal mailing front embody their thinking that is out there. They're out there, Their out there status also put them outside the metropolitan culture of the avant-garde, such as Hyde Center, and more importantly, their location outside the mainstreaming state of contemporary art, as represented by Monoha. In this context, it is important to understand what happened after January 64, when the Yomiuri newspaper company announced the termination of its annual Yomiuri Independent Exhibition, which had served as the almost only institutional site for the avant-garde. During the post-Yomiuri years, contrary to the vanguard artist's sense of loss, contemporary art gained a considerable presence in the art world and became a force to reckon with. And I will talk more about this very soon. In Spirit and Expression, our three wilderness practitioners brings in another layer of meaning, wilderness as out of the sheet of power. This is slightly different from out of Tokyo, and this is why. This is a historical layer of wilderness, or a koya in Japanese, where in ya is in koya, stand for being outside of the seat of power, either by circumstance or by choice, in the traditional East Asian vocabulary. In China, politicians descended to the wilderness, which is xia'ie, when they lost their position in the court and the government. Literati painting was a part of this tradition, with scholar painters withdrawing from the seat of power to critique the officially sanctioned academic painting. In modern Japan, being in wilderness, zaiya, gained the positive connotation of not participating in the institutional systems, whether the government, corporation, the art establishment, or academia. And then we will soon come back to this desire in pre-war art. That is to say, wilderness in East Asian tradition, especially in modern Japanese sense, signifies an alternative to the mainstream and establishment. Specifically, our three protagonists offered alternatives to a mainstreaming contemporary art represented by Gutai and Monoha. To recap, these are the aspects of the wilderness in 60 Japan among the works by our three practitioners. One that most saliently epitomizes the wilderness is Matsuzawa Yutaka's 1964 work, Independent 64 in the Wilderness. It is this work that inspired me to think of the wilderness in the context of post-war art. Since Matsuzawa's work is text-based, I'm just showing the relevant translation on the screen. It begins with his credo, "Don't believe matter, don't believe senses, don't believe the eye." And it is followed by the exhibition detail. Since the work was placed as an advertisement in an art magazine calling for entries to his exhibition. So site, period, like an installation, deinstallation dates, which is very important, but it's a past, present, future, so what the heck? And no entry fee. And then the location is not fictional. It's Nanashima Yashima Highland, which is during the summertime a tourist destination and a very beautiful place, except that in the winter it's closed and nobody goes. The most astounding is the entry method. He set up a scheme of here versus there, and real versus imaginary, which typifies his exhibition strategies. The work exemplifies not merely a situation these artists were in, but wilderness as method, which consists of, in this case, the use of a desolate landscape away from Tokyo, the application of such out-there ideas and immaterial exhibition and communication method that could include telepathy. He's upholding the idea of independent exhibition as a free forum, and his embrace of the do-it-yourself tradition of Japanese modernism in rejection of the authority and the institution. As such, this work is an icon of the wilderness in the 60s Japan. Wilderness does not exist independently, to a great extent defined by the state of the art world. Accordingly, the study of wilderness in 60s Japan necessitates that of Gendai Bijutsu or contemporary art as a whole. That means we need to examine the mainstream of Gendai Bijutsu. As mentioned before, in modern Japan, being in the wilderness, Zaya, gained a positive connotation of being independent from the institutional system, specifically in art. In 1914, when disgruntled oil painters departed from the government salon Bunten, which is short for the Ministry of Education Exhibition, and formed their own organization, Nikakai, which means Second Section Society, they proudly declared themselves to be Zaya, thereby starting a modern tradition of Zaya, non-governmental Dantai, which is an art organization. This kind of do-it-yourself strategy that is creating their own exhibition platform as an alternative to the mainstream or the establishment is one of the characteristic features of modernism in Japan, connecting 60 Japan and pre-war Japan, and even to the late 19th century, when artists started organizing themselves into Dantai organization. Notably, Nika was the first to explicitly use the language of Zaya. In the complicated history of modern collectivism in Japan, however, Zaya organization, which by definition was supposed to be anti-establishment, nonetheless by the 30s became part of the salon-based art establishment that was formed around the government salon to dominate Japan's art world. In this process, the Zaya organizations were instrumental in propelling the evolution of Bonadism and its acclimation among the population in pre-war Japan. The avant-garde, or Zenyei, and Zaya salons overlap to a small degree, but the form of collectivism taken by the avant-garde was frequently short-lived and small, remained on the margins of art world. In the post-war years, the status quo thus means the government salon and Zaya salons. And to dismantle this status quo, a series of countermeasures were instituted, one of them being the inauguration of the Yomiuri Independent Exhibition in 1948. Organized by the Yomiuri Newspaper Company, the Yomiuri Independent thus prepared the stage for the rise of 60s avant-garde of anti-art, as is well known. In the annals of 60s art in Japan, the termination of the Yomiuri Independent in 64 was therefore being registered as a major blow to the avant-garde. An irony is that Yomiuri Independent was a mainstream effort to reorganize the mainstream establishment. Thanks to this mainstream intervention, what had remained in the margin in pre-war Japan, namely the avant-garde, gained a stable space of their own at the Yomiuri Independent and turned into Gendai Bijutsu. Make no mistake, anti-art flourished at the Yomiuri Independent, not because the venue was securely supported, but because artists were bold in their innovation and experimentalism. However, the burden of mounting an exhibition, especially large-scale one, is no trivial matter. Meeting this operational and financial challenge made or broke pre-war Dantai, and it cannot be overcome simply by the artist's ingenuity and do-it-yourself activism. Still, it is with the benefit of hindsight I make this observation. For the 60s artists living in their time, the termination of Yomiuri Independent came as a shock. The post-Yomiuri debate among artists centered around two options they had control over. One was artists organized independent exhibition to pursue the true spirit of independence. The other was artists organized group exhibitions, far smaller in scale than independent exhibition, that would take advantage of the growing number of rental gallery, kashigaro, especially in Tokyo. Between the two, more relevant to the wilderness is the former. It is little surprise that there was a strong desire to continue the independent exhibition outside Tokyo in the post-Yomiuri years, because the regions outside Tokyo generally lacked institutional venues to support contemporary artists. After the first artist-organized independent exhibition, Independent 64, was held in Tokyo, a string of artist-organized independent exhibition emerged in many locales of the wilderness, that is outside Tokyo and outside the mainstreaming segment of contemporary art. Matsuzawa's immaterial exhibition, Our Icon of the Wilderness, Independent 64 in the Wilderness, was first and foremost a critique of the mainstream of the exhibition as such. The materialism of exhibition as such. Yet, it also manifested his sympathy for the independent exhibition movement. In fact, the regional independent exhibitions provided him with important occasions to present his newest works, especially his exhibition experiments. Among the Prey members, Ikemizu Keiichi was intimately involved in the post-Yomiuri independent exhibitions, and this narrative tangent directly flows into the formation of the Prey. As for GAN, the main members, Horikawa and Maeyama, were still students during the independent exhibition movement. And when they found GAN after their graduation in 67, they had to make do with rental galleries. And colored in green, all of their exhibitions were held at rental galleries in the first year. Rental gallery, or kashigaro, rent their display spaces for the weekly fees, offering artists with venues for self-organized exhibitions. And these rental fees were their primary source of income. Such spaces existed in pre-war Japan, but from the 50s onward, the number grew, especially in Tokyo. Rental galleries generally did not represent artists in the manner commercial galleries would. But some notable ones, such as Naika and Sato, had their own curatorial programs, sometimes playing a role much like alternative spaces. For invited artists were exempted from paying the weekly fees. In retrospect, however, a significant development was in progress on the institutional front, set in motion in the 50s and slowly gaining momentum in the 60s. By 1964, in Japan, there were not one, not two, but three museums that actively study contemporary art. Two National Museums of Modern Art, one in Tokyo and the other in Kyoto, and one museum of contemporary art at an unlikely place of Nagaoka in Niigata Prefecture. The Kyoto Modern, when it was inaugurated as the Tokyo Modern's branch in 63, inaugurated an annual survey, Trends in Contemporary Japanese Art, which was continued through 1970. The Nagaoka Contemporary hosted an annual Nagaoka Contemporaries Award exhibition. In tandem with the state's effort to promote modern and contemporary art as part of mainstream culture, the newspaper companies, which had become major powerhouses in official culture since wartime, competed for private sector hegemony in the art establishment. If Yomiuri's independent exhibition was instrumental in the rise of anti-art, Mainichi's twin biannuals, commonly known as Mainichi International and the Mainichi Contemporary, established in the early 50s, was indispensable in the mainstreaming of Gendai Bijutsu. In 62, the Mainichi Contemporary added an open call section to the Mainichi open section, thus adding a vital opportunity for younger artists to try out their works on a competitive basis. And from 67 onward, the Mainichi's twin biennials underwent a complete overhaul to reflect the state of contemporary art. Of special note was the 1969 Mainichi Contemporary, a section of which gave a curated survey of contemporary art, and 1970 Mainichi International, which under the title of Tokyo Biennale 1970, Man and Matter, gave another curated survey of contemporary art, this time in an international scope. Two more factors, though smaller in scale, supplemented this institutional and mainstream support. One is the institution of competitive exhibitions that catered to contemporary artists. Notably, the Shell Award exhibition, inaugurated in 58, offered rare earning opportunities through its monetary awards to some anti-art and non-art artists during the 60s, while the invitational competitions, such as Kobe Suma Rikyu Park Contemporary Art Exhibition and Hakone Open Air Museum's Contemporary International Sculpture Exhibition, both instituted in the late 60s, acknowledged the place of contemporary art in the art establishment. The other is the presence of commercial galleries specializing in contemporary art. Although the marketization of contemporary art was barely begun in 60s Japan, and its market would remain small and weak for decades to come, two primary galleries among a handful of contemporary specialists are of note. 東京ギャラリー and 南ギャラリー。東京ギャラリー、established by Yamamoto Takashi, a dealer of Japanese oil painting, took on contemporary artists, beginning with Saito Yoshishige, a pure modernist, who had become the mentor of Monoha artists, and added a good number of Japanese artists to its roster, including a few good artists in the 60s.Minami Gallery's Shimizu Kusuo, once working for Tokyo Gallery, was an adventurous gallerist who showed such Euro-American artists as John Tingley, Robert Rauschenberg, and Jasper Johns, while taking on many Japanese contemporary artists. To top them all, when the Expo 70, a massive festivity of technological futurism, was organized and realizing Osaka as a major public-private collaboration, contemporary art was made a vital part of its presentation through art exhibitions and displays, including corporate pavilions. This is an outline of mainstreaming and institutionalization of Gendai Bijutsu.The wilderness was a flip side of mainstreaming of contemporary art. The wilderness and the mainstream were not mutually exclusive in 60s Japan, with the mainstream tapping into the wilderness resources when necessary, but certain attitude prevailed in the wilderness. Those two spheres, mainstream and wilderness, complemented each other.Wilderness serves as a fertile ground for experimentalism, literally outside the box, where a different kind of experimentalism progressed inside the box of the mainstream. Experimentalism and innovative imagination operated in different guises and different directions in those two spheres. To make this point clearer,I would like to now give concrete faces to the mainstream of contemporary art and compare them with our three wilderness practitioners. A good place to start, where we can find a similar yet dissimilar comparison, is Naika Gallery, which in 64 was closed by Matsuzawa Yutaka and Hired Center.Naika Gallery was a short-lived rental gallery renowned for the director Miyata Kunio's advocacy of experimentalism. Miyata declared in his gallery manifesto that the rental gallery is a test tube in which anything can be placed. Anybody can occupy to use it at his will. In this context,Gallery closing by Hired Center in May 64 and Matsuzawa Yutaka in December 64 make a stark contrast with Robert Barry's gallery closing in 69, which disrupted the day-to-day operation of the commercial galleries. In 60s Japan, if an artist closed a rental gallery, it would hardly have amounted to a radical statement in and of itself, because by definition,Rental gallery was a freedom zone. You could do anything. So what? You close it? So what? Japanese artist thus has to go a step further to conceptualize what a closed and empty gallery could mean. On the one hand, Hired Center foregrounded the whole world outside the gallery into a ready-made object and called it a great panorama.And then that became their exhibition title. And that is the centerpiece of their exhibition. On the other hand, Matsuzawa set up a theoretical relationship of venue versus anti-venue, wherein his residence in Shimotsuwa served as the venue where he had discovered nonsensory painting, with Naika in Tokyo serving as an anti-venue, which was kept closed.His venue versus anti-venue idea, borrowed from matter versus anti-matter in contemporary physics, somehow recalls the Robert Smithson's sight non-sight a few years later. It's a very interesting comparison. After 64, Hired Center ceased their collective activities and the members went separate ways.Let us focus here on Takamatsu Jiro, whose career vividly contrasts that of Matsuzawa.After Hired Center, Takamatsu quickly devised his posterior Mimuri signature, a cognition-centered painting series of shadow, and rose to prominence as he seized the institutional opportunities. In 65, he won the first prize at the Shell Award exhibition. He was given a solo exhibition at Tokyo Gallery in 66, which marked his first ever commercial engagement. In 68, he was appointed a lecturer at Tamaat University and taught oil painting at his alma mater, Tokyo University of the Arts, from 72 to 74. In contrast to Takamatsu, who cut the dandy star figure in the mainstream of contemporary art, Matsuzawa was an enigmatic sage who made his presence known in the wilderness of the independent exhibition movement. Both Takamatsu and Matsuzawa were included in the Mainichi Contemporary of 69 and Mainichi International Aka Tokyo Biennale of 1970. In this work, My Own Death, Matsuzawa kept an assigned gallery empty, with two instruction panels hanging on either entranceway. It's a very good indication of what he does, so let us read the panel. My Own Death, painting existing only in time. When you go calmly across this room, let go my own death across your mind in a flash of lighting. That is my future genuine death, and it's similar not only to your own future death, but to past hundred millions of human beings' death, and also to future thousand trillions of human beings. True to his wilderness spirit, Matsuzawa went on to organize an international and domestic network of male art under the labels of World Uprising, Nirvana Art, and Catastrophe Art, partly inspired by his association with Art and Project, an unconventional conceptual art gallery in Amsterdam, which found Matsuzawa in 70. On screen is a global diagram of Nirvana Art Matsuzawa created, and you can see the Art and Project next to the, right hand of Nirvana label there. Underscored by his humanist concern with the imperiled state of civilization, Matsuzawa's desire for internationalism, which he put in practice beginning in 1969, was a rare effort by individuals in 60s Japan to reach out to the world. Recalling another rare instance more than a decade earlier, Gutai's internationalism, which was informed by the post-war optimism for democracy. Compared with Matsuzawa's productive but shoestring project, one of which is the World Uprising of 71, Gutai's outreach ventures were far more visible and far better financed thanks to leader Yoshihara Jiro and the French critic Michel Tapier. Indeed, whereas Gutai may be the epitome of the avant-garde in the Western perspective, it embodies not so much the wilderness as the mainstream in the scheme of 60s art in Japan, thereby embodying the evolution from the avant-garde into contemporary art from the periphery to the mainstream. As I have demonstrated elsewhere, the leader Yoshihara Jiro cleverly adapted the pre-war model of Dantai organization to Gutai's operational structure while managing it almost like a private art school. In his determined pursuit of a new art that is original and international. It is important to remember that the exhibition society Yoshihara was associated with was Nikakai, which was the first wilderness organization of oil painters as I just outlined before. In other words, he learned the ropes of pre-war collectivism from the best possible example. Gutai's mainstream position can be mapped out in several aspects. Gutai was Tokyo conscious. Yoshihara devoted the first year of Gutai to research and development in Ashiya, the city west of Osaka, where he took advantage of his senior position in the local art community and its infrastructure of local salon as a training ground for his young members. Thus, established in the summer of 54 and inaugurated its journal Gutai in January 55, Yoshihara did not mount Gutai's namesake exhibition, first Gutai art exhibition, until October 55, and it was presented at the prime location of Ohara Kaikan Hall in Tokyo. It is notable that he continued in Tokyo with Gutai's second, fourth, and fifth exhibition before holding the sixth exhibition in New York. Gallery representation was also part of Yoshihara's vision. In addition to Shiraga Kazuo being represented by Stadler in Paris, some members were represented by two prime contemporary specialists. Tokyo Gallery had Motonaga Sadamasa, Shiraga, Yoshihara himself, and the young Mukai Shuji, while Minami took on Tanaka Atsuko. Gutai members also had significant presence in Mainichi's twin biennials, as well as such museum exhibitions as New York Museum of Modern Art, New Japanese Painting and Structure that was in 66, and Japan Art Festival that began from in 66 also, among others. These occasions brought about further mainstream recognition of Gutai as the mothership for individual members. Nothing could be more status conscious than having its own gallery space. Yoshihara converted one of his properties in central Osaka into Gutai Pinakoteka in 62 as the group's headquarters, where many art world figures paid visit both from Japan and abroad. And group played a major role at Expo 70, presenting an outdoor exhibition and techno-performative festival at the Central Plaza. Following in the same Kansai region, the play was critical of Gutai's mainstream presence and maintained the staunch wilderness position. Even when they were invited to the mainstream programs, they brought the wilderness into the mainstream. And this is the prime example conceived for landscape, this bridge, first shown inside the museum, was, after the exhibition, brought out, or according to their word, return to outdoors. So those inside and then outside in the wilderness. The place collectivism differed from Gutai's. While Gutai centered around its leader Yoshihara, the play had a more equitable horizontal structure wherein the members emphasized discussion and collaboration to achieve an annual summer project. Moreover, group's membership was fluid. Each project was produced by a different set of people, and the membership encompassed non-artists, as well as artists, designers, and architects, among others. In addition, it had a certain community orientation in that the group engaged ordinary people to achieve the project. I talked about the fishermen's union, and then for the thunder, in order to erect the pyramid on the mountaintop for a month, landowners' collaboration was essential. And then this anticipated today's socially engaged art. This was a development unlikely in the mainstream institutional world, probably only possible in the wilderness, typified by the do-it-yourself spirit. When GAM members struggled to establish themselves as working artists after graduating from the teachers' college in their home prefecture, the late 60s saw a phenomenon of student artists, which in retrospect closely informed by the mainstreaming of contemporary art. Here, a comparison is made between Takamatsu and his studio assistant Sekine Nobuo. They both had first solo commercial engagement at Tokyo Gallery. I will come back to this chronology very soon. It was almost a given that art school graduates would need some time to find their voice and gain recognition as working artists. For example, Takamatsu Jiro graduated from the prestigious National Tokyo University of the Arts in 59, It took 7 years for him to have a solo exhibition at Tokyo Gallery after graduation and represent Japan at the Venice Biennale in the same year. What happened in the mid-60s was that art school graduates began to gain immediate recognitions in an increasingly competitive atmosphere of Gendai Bijutsu. Most salient example is Takamatsu's assistant, Sekine, who received his master's degree in 68 from Tama Art University in Tokyo. Thanks to immediate attention his works gained, he had his first solo show at Tokyo Gallery in the next year, in 69, and he represented Japan at the Venice Biennale in the year after that, in 1970. In his meteoric rise within 2 years after his graduation, Sekine created a series of Monoha landmarks as he was invited to one major competition after another, and each time he won prizes. Along the way, his fellow Tama Art University graduates gained recognition with their Monoha works in lockstep with Sekine. The Kyoto Modern's Trends in Japanese Contemporary Art exhibition duly noted their emergence in 69 with an aid of the astute theorization by Liu Fan. Despite being in the wilderness, that is, away from Tokyo and lacking support, or rather, thanks to being in the wilderness, Gan devised imaginative solutions to new art. Indeed, necessity is the mother of invention. It should be noted that even though Niigata or Shimotsuwa were far from Tokyo, Japan is still a small island nation. If artists with meager means in the wilderness found it difficult to overcome the distance to Tokyo, the mainstream critics and museum curators in the metropolitan areas made it their task to keep their eye on the wilderness. And regional artists made concerted effort to invite art world figures from Tokyo to their exhibitions, like independent exhibitions. Accordingly, important contributions to contemporary art in the wilderness were not completely overlooked, and the works by Matsuzawa, Prey, and Gan were incorporated in the mainstream programs of the Mainichi Newspaper Company and the Kyoto Modern. In this sense, the wilderness in 60 Japan was more symbiotic and complementary than hostile to the mainstream. With the mainstreaming of contemporary art in the 60s, the discourse on institution, Seido, entered vanguard consciousness on a few different levels, and institution critique, Seido Hihan, slowly developed in both theory and practice. In this context, the wilderness represented not so much anti-institutional as counter-institutional in that it epitomized the effort to seek alternatives outside officialdom and expand opportunities. This was what happened with pre-war Dantai collectivism, as well as such post-war collectives as the Prey and Gan. The effort was still informed by the situation in which the infrastructure for art was inadequate, and artists took countermeasures to the situation. This clearly set them apart from their Euro-American counterparts, whose institutional critique was, generally speaking, consciously anti-institutional, reacting to the perceived constraints of a system that was much stronger, more developed, and harder to escape. This type of institutional critique emerged also in 60s Japan, when Bikyoto called for dismantling the power machine of art in the midst of student movement, and subsequently moved on to critique of what they called the internal institution or internal museum. This was a development in tandem with the mainstreaming of contemporary art, prompted by what I have outlined. Namely, a set of Japanese local factors and quasi-Western infrastructures like modern museums and galleries that developed in the 60s. We cannot overlook the fact that based in Tokyo, Bikyoto, short of Artist Joint Struggle Council that was formed in the midst of student movement in 69, was headquartered at Tama Art University, which was emerging as a hotbed of contemporary art. Bikyoto was led by the school students a few years younger than Monoha generation. Also, they are from Tamaki University. Bikyoto's slogan. Okay, that was the previous. Bikyoto's slogan, now that we are called the artist, that is our battleground, eloquently speaks for their determination to be an artist despite the growing institutional constraint. Thus, Bikyoto's critique was not so much counter-institutional as anti-institutional, and it could come only from within the institutional and mainstreaming contemporary art. That was a perspective inevitably lacking in the wilderness. One final comment. Although contemporary art would not become part of mainstream culture until much later, that is, with the generation of Murakami Takashi and Nara Yoshitomo. By 1970, Gendai Bijutsu became a force to reckon with in the official art world. But their ecosystem was still fragile, as conservative critics loathed its incomprehensible nature, and the general public found it puzzling and inaccessible, which was the blame shared by both the mainstream and the wilderness of contemporary art. Yet, the whole affair, the mainstream and the wilderness of contemporary art, points to the maturing state of modernism in Japan, both in terms of its operational system and aesthetic expression. That was the outcome of a century-long development since the country began in earnest the process of modernization in the mid-19th century. Thank you.